Safety concerns continue to mount over the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant.
Ukrainian intelligence department of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine warns of possible provocations by the Russian forces at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant today.
Plus, as winter approaches, will Europe be able to import enough gas to stay warm?
This invasion by Russia is such an example of why countries need to move away from the volatility of fuels from countries who do not have our interests.
And later in the program, how volunteers are helping those hard hit by war in the Chernihiv region to continue on with their everyday lives. Today is Friday, August 19th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. The latest intelligence update from the British Defense Ministry says the Russian strikes on residential areas of Kharkiv have killed at least 12 civilians on August 17th. Multiple rocket launchers and generally inaccurate area weapons have caused devastation across large parts of the city. In addition, the Institute for the Study of War, which is a U.S. think tank, says that Russian forces conducted ground assaults south of Siversk, as well as to the northeast and south of Bakhmut, and to the northwest and southwest of Donetsk City. It also said that the Russian Defense Ministry may be setting information conditions to blame Ukraine for a false flag attack at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv joins us with more.
Ukrainian intelligence department of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine warns of possible provocations by the Russian forces at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant today. And people are informed about possible results of these provocations and what to do in case this provocation is happening, especially people who are living in the Zaporizhia region and in the city of Enerhodar in particular, because of course there to feel any results of if such provocation is actually happening. According to the intelligence department of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, they say that Russian forces announced today an unexpected day off at the Zaporizhia power plant, and they announced the alleged preparation of a terroristic attack by the armed forces of Ukraine. And here the intelligence department emphasizes that they consider this as a high probability of a large-scale terroristic attack by Russian forces. So basically, everyone are quite on the alarm today. But for the moment, I can say that nothing extraordinary has been reported from the site.
Thank you for that update, Anna, and we'll, of course, be keeping close contact with that. I also want to turn attention to Crimea because Thursday evening, social media feeds were illuminated with pictures, video of explosions taking place. Ukraine's military has not taken any responsibility directly for attacks and explosions that have been taking place at Russian facilities in Crimea. But what can you share with us about these latest explosions?
So Russian sources reported explosions across Crimea, and they said that it was caused by Russian air defense or Ukrainian actions, as they place it. They reported that the local sources of Russian Federation reported to Reuters that at least four explosions were heard around Belbek Air Base in Sevastopol. It's one of the also the main air bases in the whole occupied Crimea. And also Russian sources claimed that the drone was shot down near the Kerch Bridge. Again, we cannot confirm this information. We only hear it from Russian sources. Unfortunately, it's impossible to verify it. From the Ukrainian sources, we also hear that explosions next to Sevastopol might be the case, and they might took place yesterday.
And Anna, one last thing. Back in June, Ukrainians pulled together some $16 million through donations and fundraising to purchase three Turkish-made drones. Now, the company ultimately did donate those drones to the Ukrainian military, which left the organizers with that money on hand. Now, I understand that this week they've actually made a purchase with those funds?
Yes, actually, it was quite an unprecedented fundraising that was organized by volunteers in Ukraine, and particularly it was the Sergei Pritulov Foundation who organized this. And yesterday, Sergei Pritulov confirmed that actually this money were used, in short, to buy a satellite. Of course, it was not. It's not that the satellite is bought and then, you know, brought to space by Ukraine. This is a satellite which is a Finnish space company, ICI. So this satellite will, Ukraine will receive the control for the satellite for no time limit, and also over a 1 year unlimited access to photos of the network of the company's satellites. What was confirmed today by Sergei Pritulov that this satellite, this one particular satellite, will be Ukrainian. So Ukraine, the country of Ukraine, will be the owner of the satellite, and it would be in the possession of Ukrainian armed forces and intelligence.
Anna Chernikova, reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
French President Emmanuel Macron spoke by phone with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday about a possible IAEA visit to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. Macron's office says in a readout of the call that Putin indicated some agreement on the topic and that the pair would revisit the topic soon. The situation around the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant is also on the mind of U.S. officials. Earlier this week, Yulia Yarmolenko from VOA's Ukrainian service had an exclusive interview with U.S. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, and that's where we pick up their conversation.
First, we agree with the demilitarization. There should not be military activities around a nuclear plant, period. It is extremely dangerous. We're monitoring the situation very closely. There are sensors that are in the region that our scientists are monitoring. We strongly condemn what Russia has done. We want them to turn the plant control back over to the Ukrainians. We are so grateful for the workers in the plant who have continued to operate it and continue to try to abide by rules of safety. But we want to have the International Atomic Energy Agency to have access so they can help with safety, they can monitor, they can make sure the protocols for safety are instilled. And, you know, that has not happened yet. So we call upon Russia needs to turn control back over to the Ukrainians, and we need to stop all military activity near the plant.
And you talk a little bit about the monitoring mission. What would be the successful monitoring mission? And are you confident in its independence?
Well, I'm confident that the information that we are receiving through the monitors show at the moment no increase in radiation. But our concern is, of course, if there is continued military activity around the plant, if there is an increase in radiation, that is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, Russia knows this. They've been in the nuclear power business for a long time. And that it is just reckless and irresponsible what they are doing. So success is turn the plant back over to the Ukrainian authorities, make sure that we are continuously monitoring and do not see elevated signs of radiological contamination.
And are there any tools that international community can use in order to make Russian forces leave the plant? And if the power plant stays under Russian control, can anyone be sure that Europe will not see another nuclear catastrophe?
Well, I mean, clearly nobody wants to see that happen. I mean, there would be fallout that would, you know, that could damage Russia as well. So they have to understand how serious this is. You know, the United States obviously stands so strongly with Ukraine and will continue to support Ukraine with assistance. You know, we support the demilitarization. Of course, President Biden has said no U.S. troops on the ground, but through our allies and with our own resources, we will continue to support Ukraine.
Even before the full-scale war, the experts were warning about Russia weaponization
yep.
of energy.
Yes.
And they were calling on European leaders to diversify their sources of energy, to wind down the dependence of Russian energy. Now Europe is preparing for a very difficult winter. And do you think that European countries will be able to import enough gas from other sources, including the United States, to make up for the shortages?
Well, first of all, I think they have to have a multi-pronged strategy, which is why, I mean, diversification of their fuel sources is one of that. So both diversifying where they're getting the fuel from, but also diversifying into clean energy, right? To decarbonize their grid, to deploy clean, to also reduce their energy uses. And they are moving on all of those strategies. You know, the United States, of course, the president has committed to sending more liquefied natural gas. We're working together with the Europeans on a number of technologies to be able to reduce their energy use and to generate clean energy. But honestly, this invasion by Russia is such an example of why countries need to move away from the volatility of fuels from countries who do not have our interests and from the volatility of fossil fuels. If we want to be energy secure and energy independent, that means we've got to produce our own energy. My counterpart in Ireland, the minister there, energy minister there, has said that no one has ever weaponized access to the sun. No one has ever weaponized the wind. Perhaps a move to clean energy will be the greatest peace plan the world has ever known.
U.S. Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm speaking with my VOA Ukrainian service colleague, Yulia Yarmolenko. Ukraine's healthcare system, which has already suffered from corruption, mismanagement, and the pandemic, has deteriorated even more rapidly since the start of the war. From the Associated Press, Karen Chamas continues our coverage.
As she shows AP journalists the way into the hospital, head doctor Ilona Butova takes them down damaged corridors, her feet cracking shattered glass as she walks. Butova tells the AP, "We had 120 men before the start of the war. This included not only medical personnel, but also service personnel. At the moment, 47 people remain with us." Ukraine's health system, paralyzed by extensive war damage and a massive exodus of people, is being propped up by volunteers and doctors who refuse to leave. 79-year-old Vanda Bendorovska was one of the patients saved by volunteers. Her son was killed by a Russian artillery attack and her home destroyed in the war. "There is no one to help me. No place to live, no child. Everything was overcome and nothing was left behind." I'm Karen Chamas.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres visited Ukraine's Black Sea port city of Odessa on Friday, where he was joined by the country's infrastructure minister as well as the city's mayor. Guterres said that there is still much more to do to ensure global access to Ukrainian food products and Russian food and fertilizers after a UN-brokered food export deal.
"This is an agreement between two parties locked in a bitter war. It is unprecedented in scope and scale, but there is still a long way to go on many fronts. Getting more food and fertilizer out of Ukraine and Russia is crucial to further calm commodity markets and lower prices."
Guterres said that it was time for massive and generous support so that developing countries could purchase the food from Odessa as well as other ports. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Hostage negotiations are a delicate test in diplomacy, and they are handled at the highest levels of the American government. The Biden administration recently clarified its stance on the issue. But does this come in time for the release of several high-profile hostages held overseas? VOA's Anita Powell has that story.
The White House faces constant pressure from more than 60 American families whose relatives are held hostage overseas, including one whose family is marking 10 years without him. Austin Tice has been missing in Syria since August 2012. He's been missing longer than any other American journalist. Syria's government denies holding him, which the State Department refutes. State Department spokesman Ned Price:
"We believe to this very day that Syria still has the power to release Austin Tice. That is why we are calling on the Syrian regime to do just that.
But hostage situations are rarely straightforward and often escalate to the highest levels of government. Earlier this year, President Joe Biden's administration oversaw a prisoner swap for the release of Trevor Reed, a former Marine held since 2019 in Russia. Last month, after basketball star Brittany Griner appeared in a Russian court on drug charges, the administration refined its hostage policy, allowing agencies to impose sanctions and visa bans on both state and non-state actors who are holding Americans. Those campaigning to free Tice welcomed these changes and are calling on Biden to act. The leader of the campaign told VOA that the Syrian government, in a 2020 meeting with U.S. officials, indicated they are seeking a reduction in U.S. troops in Syria, sanctions relief, and limited diplomatic engagement in Washington and Damascus. Bill McCarron heads the Free Austin Tice campaign and also leads the National Press Club of Washington, D.C. He spoke to VOA on Zoom.
And now what needs to happen is an offer needs to be put on the table, and it is the United States that needs to do that. That is where the ball is right now.
But those who have worked in the West Wing say patience is essential. Philip Bobbitt, now a law professor, was working at the White House on January 20, 1981, as President Ronald Reagan was being sworn in and Iran's supreme leader released 52 U.S. hostages after 444 days.
The president has to have confidence in his negotiators. If he tries to jiggle their elbow to get the hostages back with more dramatic threats or with more dramatic concessions, he'll really, even if he succeeds in the instant case, make things more difficult for the United States when hostages are taken again in the future. So he has to find negotiators in whom he has confidence, give them a charter, and keep steadily to that.
But for families, this process can be excruciating and can still fail. Diane Foley learned that 8 years ago this week. Her son James, a journalist, had been kidnapped 9 months earlier in Syria by a militia group loyal to Syria's president. On August 19th, the captors released a chilling video showing Foley. He'd been decapitated. Foley's mother said she welcomed the changes that have been made since. She spoke to VOA as she prepared to travel to Virginia for the sentencing of one of the men convicted in her son's kidnapping and murder.
There's definitely been progress, Anita. I really feel there is. In 2015, you know, the hostage recovery fusion cell was created, the special envoy, and the whole hostage enterprise. When Jim was in captivity, there was no such thing. So at least we have people accountable for the return of Americans. So there's definitely a heightened awareness at the highest levels of our government.
McCarron argues that the Foley family's path to justice shows that the U.S. government isn't playing a zero-sum game.
This is not a question of you can either get the hostage out or you can hold the person accountable by justice. You can do both things. You can do both things. And that's what I think the rigidity of the U.S. policy does not allow for.
But for the families of Griner, Whelan, and dozens of other Americans held overseas, the request to the White House is constant, unwavering, and simple. Bring them home. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
A restaurateur and rapper duo unveiled Stars Coffee on Thursday, reopening a chain of coffee shops in Russia that was formerly owned by Starbucks. That marks the latest major company rebranding after a months-long Western corporate exodus from the country. Reuters' Jason Albano takes it from here.
Starbucks may have left Russia back in May, but a new chain of coffee shops in the capital, Moscow, is hoping to replicate its success in more ways than one. Russian restaurateur Anton Pinsky and rapper Timati debuted new venture Stars Coffee on Thursday. Its logo and font might bear a striking familiarity to any coffee drinker walking down the street. But Timati insists it's all about perception.
American company. The American company gave its partner in Kuwait a right for a franchise in Russia, and this company was developing its coffee shops under this brand. When Starbucks decided to leave Russia, the company from Kuwait had lost interest in doing business without the brand. So they sold the right to their rental locations. We won the tender. There were a lot of participants, acquired it, and made our own brand. That is it.
The conflict in Ukraine triggered a months-long exodus of Western corporations from Russia, but local entrepreneurs are quickly filling that void. In June, Russians celebrated a new era of fast food with a homegrown version of McDonald's. But these enterprises are not without their hard work. Timati says that because Starbucks had its own resource and production base, they've had to find new suppliers. Over 15 years, Starbucks grew its presence in Russia to 130 stores that employed a 2,000-strong staff. While it declined requests for comment, the Seattle-based company referred to an earlier statement that said it had made the decision to exit the Russian market and no longer had a brand presence there.
Jason Albano of Reuters News. The Russian invasion of Ukraine has taken a heavy toll on the Chernihiv region. Older residents have lost almost everything, including their homes and personal possessions. But volunteers are doing their best to help these people return to a more normal life. Anna Kostichenko rounds us out.
Anatoly Babenko just turned 79. This year, however, there are no celebrations. He has nowhere to host a party. Russian rockets destroyed his home in the Chernihiv region. Babenko, who has worked hard all his life, never expected to become homeless at this age. To him, the most shocking part is that Russia attacked his home.
I'm a sensitive person. I take everything to heart. I get very emotional when I start talking about it. The most painful bit for me is that Russians betrayed us, but we will survive.
Oksana Dekhterenko, also a Chernihiv resident, is among the most passionate volunteers here. Her social network posts made possible the purchase of several modular houses for older adults. Dekhterenko visits them nearly every week, bringing fresh groceries, talking with them, and supporting them in any way she can.
I said that I will help until I fall down. And to be honest, I'm on edge. It all started as I brought fresh bread and saw how badly people needed help. Many families left, but older people didn't want to leave their homes, and they need support.
For 92-year-old Natalia Navozenko, the food Dekhterenko brings is the only food she gets. She has nowhere to cook. The Russian military reduced Navozenko's home to rubble.
Well, the house burned down. I ran to the bushes. I still had a cow. I untied it. My hands were already burned, and my shoes and shawl were on fire. And when I came back later that night, I saw that there was nowhere to sleep.
Dekhterenko takes care of the residents in and just outside Chernihiv, even though her own home had been shelled. At the time, she left for Western Ukraine with her husband and 14-year-old son. She was afraid Russians would shoot her and her family.
We left when there was very heavy shelling in the area. Russian troops had already entered the neighborhood.
Dekhterenko's business also suffered in the war. Before the invasion, she worked as a fashion designer, but then water seeped through the studio's war-damaged roof and destroyed all her fabric.
This one workshop is more expensive than that house. All the fabric is damaged and should be thrown away. I can't imagine what I'm going to do now.
For now, she can't revive her business. She's too busy volunteering. She has set up a pop-up humanitarian center in her house where other volunteers bring necessities, anything from baby food to clothes to cups and plates, for those who need help the most. Anna Kostyuchenko for VOA News, Chernihiv, Ukraine.
And that's going to do it for us this week. Be sure to stay up with the latest developments, not only in Ukraine, but on news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media feeds. Just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.